welcome to the Artist in Residence Podcast, Episode 2. I'm your host, Stacey Bird. I'm a creative producer and artist living in New York City. I spend most of my days project managing teams. After a week of meetings, project schedules, and more meetings, I spend most of my weekend catching up with friends and family, going to the gym, running errands, snuggling up with my partner in front of the TV. While I thought this was a balanced life and an adult, something was missing. I still wasn't feeling like myself. 3 years ago, I signed up for a collage and mixed media class. Ever since then, collage has become my creative outlet. It allowed me to tap into all the things I used to do as a kid, sculpture, painting, photography, as well as everything I learned in college studying film and television. After years of being in environments where I was considered not creative, I started to believe it. I lost part of myself, but when I rediscovered it, I felt compelled to let other people know they're creative too, and they should let their inner artists out to play. To give you a little overview of what I hope to do with my podcast is, each episode, I'm going to interview another artist. When I say artist in the broadest term. A person who engages in an activity deemed to be an art. This can be a fine art, a performing art, a visual art, anything made by hand. Cheese, woodworking, engravings, crafts. Interviews will take you through their journey as to how they became an artist. And we'll also include a lightning round of questions, which could range from anything from what inspires you to what's your favorite TV show. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Raquel Keller, a multidisciplinary artist that works in painting, drawing, photography, and assemblage. While Raquel started off on a more traditional path, working in graphic design with a concentration in fine arts from the American University in DC, she found herself spending 15 years working in a law firm. Before she found her way back to her inner artist. I leave you with this one note. This is my second podcast, so please be kind. I'm learning as I'm going. It may be messy. There may be a few extra ums and clicks and not a perfect audio mix, but I'm doing it. And that's what's important. And that's the whole goal of this podcast, is to think about what can you be doing? What can you do to get your creativity out in the world? Maybe this episode will inspire you, or maybe a different one will. I encourage you to give me your feedback. I love to shape this podcast into a vehicle for giving you inspiration for trying new things and tapping into your creativity. Without further ado, here's episode 2.
Welcome to episode 2 of Artist in Residence. I have with me today Raquel Keller, multidisciplinary artist who started off a little bit more of a traditional path of studying art and found her way off that path into working in a law firm for 15 years before finding her way back into the world of art. So I am going to turn the mic over to Raquel and have her tell you a little bit about herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Raquel. I am, as Stacey said, a multidisciplinary artist. And so I work in a variety of mediums, primarily painting, assemblage, photography, and printmaking. I consider them all to be sort of like having different languages. And I feel like when you speak in a native tongue, that it's that much more authentic. So when I'm creating a project, I like to think about what would ring truest to get the story across that I'm telling. So when I first went to college, way back when, I went for photography. I went for a very short stint to RIT in New York and dropped out because I got sick, because I enjoyed it, I guess, a little too much. So then I had to recover and I found myself sitting at home with lots of time. And nobody my age was around. So I would take community college classes and just pick the ones I liked, you know, anything from psychology to photography to calligraphy, all sorts of things. And then found my way back to college because I was like, okay, I'm not going to survive on minimum wage. I need to get a degree. I don't care what it is. I just need a degree. I ended up applying to American University, pursuing a degree in graphic design. I also had a really strong stint with like fine arts. So it's sort of graphic design with a focus on fine arts. And I can tell you that once I graduated and I got out into the real world, graphic design was not my thing. And it was really, really clear to me that it was not my thing. Graphic design is just very different from fine art. In graphic design, you have a lot of clients who you will craft this thing that you think is perfection. And rightfully so, they're your client. They want to tweak it. It was too painful for me to continue. So I left there. I went on a spate of waiting tables. I worked for Planet Hollywood for a number of years. And that was great until one day I decided I needed to get a real job. Do you know the show Al's Diner, like Mel's Diner?
No.
It's an old show. In it, there's a character named Flo, and she has a big red beehive, and she would say things like, kiss my grits. She was just a character. And so in my head, I built up like, oh my gosh, if I don't have a real job by the time I'm 30, I'm going to turn into Flo. So I used that vision to kind of spur me. Long story short, I was telling anybody that would listen that I wanted a full-time job, didn't care what it was, just want 9-to-5 salary and insurance. I was in this bar that we would all hang out in after working at Planet Hollywood. Shout out to Harry's awesome little bar. And I said to someone, I just want a full-time job. And the bartender overheard me and said, come on down here. I'll talk to you. And I was like, oh, I'm a little afraid, but okay. And so he goes, this is just my part-time gig. I work in a law firm full-time during the day. Are you interested? They have an admin assistant position. And I said, yeah, I am. He goes, okay, bring me your resume. So I took my resume to him the next day and I had a job in a law firm within a week. And, you know, my intention was, I'm just going to stay here for a year, pay off my bills, blah, 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 blah. But then I found that I really liked the people and they really allowed me to be creative the get-go. Like I was helping them with redefine their marketing material. I helped them establish their marketing department. So I got a lot of opportunity to use some creative skills. Flash forward, I'm going to say around 10 years later, and I, you know, moved up the food chain, so to speak, and I was making a six-figure income, a very nice, healthy income with insurance.
Living your parents' dream, right?
Right. They were like, look, she's so successful. But I was miserable. It was like I just had become miserable. And I would watch these shows on PBS. And it was, like I'll say, American Artists and Makers. But I would sit on my sofa and I would just leak from my eyes. I can't even say it was crying. I didn't sob. I didn't wail. I didn't keen. I just leaked. Like, it'll still make me tear up to think about it.
Your inner artist was literally coming out of you.
It was like, help me, you know? And so I think probably about the third show I watched and this occurred, because like the first two, you know, I was like, well, this is just weird, you know? But around the third show, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm betraying myself. I was not put on this earth to manage in a law firm. And I need to find a way to get back to what I was made to do. About 6 months, I tried to think of possible scenarios and solutions, and none of them quite ticked all the boxes. And so finally, I was like, I'm going to have to admit to somebody that I need to make this change. And so I should probably start with my boyfriend. Because I was just keeping it all in, you know, because it seems so far out and such a strange concept to do what you want to do.
Did you think you were going to come across a lot of resistance?
I think I probably thought that it was insane, is probably what I think. I probably just thought they are going to think I am crazy. But I know enough about myself. When I get to a certain point, I will start jettisoning stuff to make it happen. And so I told him, I woke up one morning and I was like, here's the deal. I think I need to make this change. And I listed out all the potential scenarios. I was like, sell the house, move to a small town, live off the proceeds of my house, you know, like all sorts of crazy stuff. And so lo and behold, he didn't think I was insane. He literally was like, okay, let's work on it. And I said, okay. I got a life coach to help me kind of sort out the nitty gritty. Like, what do I need? The best part was, is they did it's a survey of where you'll be most satisfied, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions was, tell me about your current job. And all I could write was, I hate it. So he says to me, you may need to expand upon this a little bit. You tell me what you don't like about it. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, fine. I worked with him for a couple of years, just sort of laying the groundwork and figuring it out and saying, this is, you know, what I want to do and getting myself comfortable with stepping out. On January 3rd, 2012, I woke up, looked at my boyfriend and said, do you have a problem with today being the day? And he said, no. And there was somebody very specific I wanted to tell first that I worked with, and she wasn't there on the 3rd. So I had to wait till the 5th. But I felt it was very important because she was a partner in the firm and she had really been in the trenches with me making things work. And I thought, what do you give somebody who owns a business when you're just a subordinate? And so I was like, I'm going to give her the gift of being the first to know. And I just felt really strongly I had to let her know first. And I didn't want her to hear it through the grapevine because that grapevine is quick. Now, then I applied to a job that paid me around $10 an hour, but it was in a museum and it was a museum assistant position. And they took a risk on me and hired me, this insane woman who's leaving six figures to work for 10, because I had negotiated part-time work at the law firm, blah, 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 blah. And I decided, no, I didn't even want that. I didn't want that salary even. So I got this job as a museum assistant and it was the best thing I could have ever done for myself. I would walk around like when it was slow and I would look at paintings. I felt like I was getting paid to learn about art. It was just wonderful. And like you talked to everybody there loved art. I just wanted to put myself in a place that people loved art the way I loved art. So I'd say I built my tribe, so to speak. Like I was like, I'm going to find my, I've been with that museum for around 8 years. I've had some wonderful opportunities. I've taught classes there. I'm now an artist in residence in Greenbelt. Because of my background in the law firm, I know the importance of building a resume. And I think that even applies to artists. And so every action that I take is really, I'm going to say, to build my credibility. I'm like, will this add to my resume? And so I decided to apply for this artist in residence position. And they're like, I think 8 of us there because it's a juried thing. And I was like, okay, because that's going to look good if I get in because it's blessed by the city. So already I have a little bit of their cachet. Then I just started applying to things. To me, it was like a numbers game. And so I ended up getting a residency in France, which was like a lifelong dream. And I literally put an out of office on my email that said, I'm off living out my lifelong dream of painting in France. And it's a place called Chateau Arcavaux, and it's phenomenal. Just a great, great experience. Spent a week in Paris afterwards, seeing all the things, you know, that I'd always wanted to see, and it was great. One of the people who was from the Chateau, she and I like traipsed around Paris for a week, and it was great. Drank wine, looked at people, laughed.
I love it. My favorite part of that story is the out of office message. I'm out living my dream.
It really was like, I'm not going to be answering anything.
I think I would frame that. I think I would put that on my wall. You know, I wanted to ask, just kind of taking a little trip in the time shit back to when you were younger. Mm-hmm. Do you recall the first time you realized that art was your thing or that you were really like connecting with something as a child that like just never left you?
I have this story. My mom will kill me for telling this story. So when I was probably, I'm going to say 5 years old, like I loved to draw Snoopy characters. Loved it. I would draw them endlessly to the point of insanity. And one day I was in my room and I would draw and I would come out and I would show my mom. And my mom would say, you're not drawing those. You're tracing them. Stop lying to me. How could she doubt me? I'm so full of integrity, right? And so I went back and I did another drawing. And then I came back and she's like, I told you, stop lying to me. I know you're tracing it. And this is at 5. Like, how can I get her to understand I'm not doing this? So what I did was I went back, I did a drawing, and I came back and I showed it to her. And she was just irate. You know, that I was just lying. I did have a penchant for lying, though. I would steal gum and chew it in your face and say, I didn't take it. So
So a lot of kids do that. I don't know. Maybe they just like telling stories, or they like to see the reaction.
Yeah. I do think it's like we know that's probably not true. But so what I did was I had drawn the drawing. She got upset, you know, and then I went back and I came back out with a stuffed animal and said, how did I trace this? Then she never said it again. So I remember just very early on sort of sitting in myself and going, you know, I'm not going to doubt that. And I just think, because my older sister and I talk about it all the time, how different I was from how she was. Because I would just be like, mm-mm. I think I just really early on understood that art was my thing. I moved around a lot. So it kind of resonates with what you say. I think you say something along the lines of that it was your friend and confidant. For me, very much so. We moved every 2 to 4 years. I went to 3 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, and 3 high schools. And 3 colleges, but that was by my own design. by then it was a habit and I needed
to. Yeah, I was going to say that it's par for the course.
right. It was I don't know what this is. It's a stay in one thing. I did art all the way through it and loved it.
What brings you the most joy in making art? Is there a particular part of the process that you enjoy the most? Because I know for me, it's probably the whole entire experience of it. How am I going to make this idea come out to, I just have this array of materials. What am I going to do with it to the actual doing, which is a whole other experience. And then when it's done, and if I actually like it, I guess a high, you know, you're like, I did it.
Yep. I think it would depend on when you ask me that question. Do you know what I mean? If you're what's it? And I'm thinking about something, I'm like, oh, I love, because I love puzzling it out. I love the rumination portion of it. Sometimes you'll hear me call it procrastination. But really what it is let me kind of work out all of the potential scenarios to make this happen. And how would I do that? So my system, I love when it comes especially to things like assemblage art and collage and things. So the cards I was showing you earlier, I use those even in my creative process. Mm-hmm. So I use it in the business process. I use it in the creative process. Sticky notes, I use by the dozens. And there's another stack over there. So I love that because I love office products, you know, Sharpies. Because I feel part of it, with knowing my project so well through rumination and then, you know, lists and sticky notes and the such, then it frees me up to look for the things that will help tell that story. Because I think there are so many doors and windows that you'll see, but they're not all the right doors and windows. And so if you really know what it is that you're trying to do, then you can say, oh, that's my door, or that's my window. It's really evident for me, especially in assemblage. I'll even write down, this is the character traits of it. On the back of it, I'll have potential symbols for it. And then I might not even go, oh, that's the right thing. And it might not even be the symbol that's listed on the card. But it allows me, by being so thoroughly planned out, it allows me to also be spontaneous. You know, my painting is a totally different approach. My painting is just very emotive. It's not thoroughly thought out. And then I'll be like, I should have put a bigger canvas, but I'm okay with it. You know, I paint a lot from my imagination because I feel like I'm 52. I know what a lemon looks like, you know. do I really need it? And it's a fun little kind of game to play with myself. So I teach classes. And so one of the things I really try to break through for people is they'll say, you know, I can't do this. I'm not creative, this, that, and the other. And so I bring samples and I go, oh, you know, here's a sample for you. And they'll be like, oh, that's great. You know, and I'll be like, guess what? None of that exists. I did one where it was a lemon with a blue and white checkerboard in the background. Cause I was like, oh, I'm going to paint a lemon. So I painted a lemon, you know? And then I was like, oh, I want it to have a vintage feel. What would be that? Oh, all right. A blue and white checkered, you know, background. Cause I was like, oh, now it's just in a vintage kitchen.
Can I ask you as a teacher, what do you say to someone who says they're not creative?
I say, yes, you are. I am a full believer that everybody's creative. I think we're meant to create. I mean, you think about the cavemen, why in the world they're fighting for survival, right? Mm-hmm. And they're painting on the walls. It's why would you do that? It serves no purpose, no survival purpose. So I think that we are designed to create. And whether it is creating paintings, whether it's crafting arrows, whether it's figuring out that you can, you know, split this piece of rock in a certain way to make a sharp edge. Do you know what I mean? That's creativity. Yeah. Who's going to look at a rock and be like, hey, if I split this, right? Everybody.
There's a lot of people who think they're not creative. There's also like a whole sect of people who think they're creative because you don't have specific training. They consider you not to be creative.
But those people aren't your tribe.
I think more people need to hear that everyone's creative. A lot of people who I talk to who used to be creative or used to do a lot of art class or used to paint all the time, friends of mine who I used to admire and always compare my work to that haven't touched a paintbrush in 15 years, they tell me all the time that they don't have the time to make or create anymore. Well, I'm sure there's some truth to everybody being too busy. What type of advice would you give to someone who says, I can't find the time, but I want to? Do you think they're just making excuses, or can everyone find 5 minutes a day to do something creative? And what could that be?
I'm not going to say that they're making excuses. I'm going to say that maybe it's not their priority, because I think whenever you put something as a priority, then you will find the time. You know, I think a really good common example would be exercise. If you put your mind to it and be like, oh, I'm going to get healthy, you're going to find the time to exercise. I think the same thing with, you know, creativity. And I personally think that creative endeavors and kind of lifting yourself out of, I'm going to say, your everyday life is really good for like your well-being. And I actually think that even if you're like, I'm not going to be a professional painter or maker or whatever, I think that it enables you to think a little bit differently and problem solve a little bit better. Like how I survived in a law firm for 15 years is that I was creative. Like there's a position out there that every law firm now has because we were thinking creatively. We were like, we need to find a way to get this group of people. And it started with us, and then it caught on like wildfire. And you could probably find one in pretty much so any large firm. So I think that that's what creativity can do for you if you're in what we'll say is like a norm job, you know, is that it helps you problem solve. It helps you not think so much in a linear fashion. I think you're able to think horizontally and vertically when you are creative. And I think you can find 2 minutes. What I do with especially my watercolor classes, because people are afraid of watercolor. I'm not trained in watercolor. I'm trained in oil paint, but I work in oil, acrylic, and watercolor. And oddly, the two things I teach are acrylic and watercolor for painting, because we can't have toxic materials in the community center. Okay, so I've had to adjust. But with the watercolor, what I do is put a timer down and paint for 2 minutes. So pick any object, don't worry about what it is. And I do it along with them. I'll go through my house and pick up an object and just set it down next to me on the sofa. Watercolor is very portable, you know, don't take it too seriously. And it's like, just paint for 2 minutes. Nobody can be right in 2 minutes. You can get something close to what you want. And one, you're going to be amazed at what you can do in 2 minutes. And then when you have 5 minutes, wow, what is that even going to look like, right? That's going to be a luxury. I think, you know, find 2 minutes, having your morning coffee. Do a little painting, do a tiny collage.
That's good advice to someone who is trying to kind of fit in everything. Prioritizing is key, but it's like you said, it's to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Like the whole person needs to really be maintained, you know?
Right.
Even if you're prioritizing family or other people over you, you really need to take care of yourself in order to take care of everyone else. So,
and get everybody on board in the family. You know, hey, look. 2 minutes at breakfast and they're little tiny paintings that I'm asked them to do, like no bigger than like an index card. So if you get everybody going, it's just a nice little pop of relief from everyday life. You know, everybody's so busy.
Everyday life has changed with the coronavirus pandemic. Families and individuals and couples, they're home, you know, they don't know what to do with themselves. So there's no better time than now to draw the person sitting next to you, find that old cracked watercolor paint in the junk drawer, to take crayons, to take out an old magazine. Or for me, I started collecting the waste that I've been producing between grocery stores and the coffee cups and the junk mail that seems to not cease at all during this time,
right?
You know, that is going to kind of end up getting assembled into some type of collage. In some ways, it's a gift. You know,
there's a little bit of a time for, I'll say, reinvention.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so with the kind of, as we're closing toward the end of our time, I have kind of just a quick fire question round. Who's your favorite artist?
Sally Mann.
And why?
I like the dark Southern Gothic sort of landscape photos that she does. They just speak to me.
What's your favorite movie?
Blank Man. It just makes me laugh every time because he's inventive and he's like, da na 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 na, da na 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 na.
And what's your favorite place to travel, or where do you want to go as soon as the travel bans are lifted?
Locally, the art store. I've always wanted to visit Portugal. I think I would like to go to Portugal.
That's on my list as well. If you were trapped on a desert island or stuck in a quarantine house, what are the 5 things that you want to make sure you have?
My husband. He makes me laugh and he's very handy. Chocolate.
That's important.
Art supplies. Water. My pets.
Good thing to have if you're stranded or just locked in your house.
Yeah, right.
My last question for you is for someone who is currently working in a law firm or a bakery or Amazon or somewhere where they're just, you know, doing their job and they're wondering if there's anything else out there for them or they can't take it anymore. What advice would you give to them or your younger self to change their reality or to try something new?
So it's going to be like a few things. So I would say get started. I would say reach out to people. Tell people what you want to be doing. Figure out what you want to do and then tell people. Because I've found that people really do want to help people. Like there was a guy who showed up to one of my shows. He'd had a kid who was now, I think, 5 since the last time I saw him. He was like, I can't come to every show. He goes, but please keep me on your mailing list because I just like knowing that I know an artist. And he's a lawyer, you know. And so know that by putting yourself out there, it's not strange. It's not weird. It's not insane. Sometimes you inspire people and you don't even know it.
You inspire me.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. I think that's it. I reach out, reach out. I think that's the biggest thing. Reach out.
That's good advice. With that, that brings us to the end of my second episode, Artist in Residence. Thank you again for tuning in and listening to episode 2 of Artist in Residence podcast. If you're interested in viewing Raquel Keller's work or connecting with her, you can head over to her website, raquelkeller.com. Keep following me on my Instagram channel at Stacey Collages for updates on upcoming episodes. If you're out there working on work, tag me. I'd love to see what you're working on and follow you and see where your journey takes you.